Welcome to the Philacrosophy Podcast, where host and lacrosse expert Jamie Monroe will do what he does best, talk about lacrosse. Each episode will provide listeners with education, insights, stories, and lessons about the lacrosse world. We will discuss current events, coaching, philosophies, and college lacrosse recruiting. Now let's get started with your host, Jamie Monroe.
How's it going, everybody? Really excited to welcome Jack Rowlett to the Philacrosophy Podcast. Jack is the defensive coordinator at Boston University and plays for the PLL Chaos. Jack, really fired up to have you on the show, man. How are you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Pumped to be here. Excited. Love being up in Boston. I love the Red Sox hat you got on. So it should be a good day.
That's right. Yep. Originally from Providence and going to be heading back to Boston this weekend. So fired up to get back there. So Jack, as I usually do with, these podcasts, I like to kick it off with getting a quick bio. So why don't you tell us a little bit about where you came from and who are some of the most important, coaches and mentors in your life?
Yeah. So, I grew up in Fairfax, Virginia, or Burke, Virginia, which is about 45 minutes, south of Washington, DC. I went to Robinson Secondary School, which is just a massive public school, about 1500 kids per grade. Like a Pentagon feeder school, basically. All the families that move into the Pentagon typically come to my high school. So I didn't start playing lacrosse until seventh grade competitively. I did I did some clinics in like sixth grade, but my first real season was seventh grade. So I started a little late. My first day of lacrosse, they told me I was going to play defense, and then I missed the next practice where I was supposed to flip and play offense. So I've been kind of stuck being a D guy. From day one, which is it's been a blessing. So yeah, went to Robinson, played for VLC, Virginia Lacrosse Club. That was my travel group growing up. And then kind of to touch on some of those mentors you mentioned, like two guys, you know, that taught me the most in terms of X's and O's was, you know, Adam Langley and John DiCamillo. Adam Langley played at Duke. He was a walk-on there from Chicago initially, but had a lot of experience, you know, from the way Coach Dino runs stuff down there. He ran our travel program pretty similar in terms of, you know, we were doing film sessions, we were doing, you know, workouts with him. You know, he ran us pretty intensely. And then the other guy was John DiCamillo. John actually played for Coach Bresci, which is kind of a small world, at Ohio State before Bresci came to UNC. And he's where I got all of the way I play defense is strictly from John DiCamillo. He was a pole himself. He was about 5'5" when he played, right? So he had to be able to throw checks. He had to be able to think about the game differently. And he always allowed me to do whatever I want. He just wanted me to have a plan when I did it. So that was someone I really, you know, benefited from. And then obviously went to Carolina, played there for a couple years or 4 years. Been at Georgetown for 3 years prior to this. And this is year one at BU. So looking forward to the future up here in Boston.
Love it. So, you know, as far as your defensive philosophy, you know, you're still pretty young. Your bio didn't take as long as some guests I have. It's like 45 minutes into the podcast and we're still in 1991. So that was a great job. But how has the mentors that you grew up with, DiCamillo, Bresch, Kevin Warren, sort of shaped and then your own playing career and playing for Coach Towers and stuff. Mm-hmm. How is that in the pro stuff? How has that sort of shaped where your defensive philosophy is now? And if you could sort of touch on what you kind of learned from those various mentors and how you apply it now, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a proponent of, you know, there's a million ways to play defense correctly, but the most important thing for us is being on the same page. And I think lacrosse in general is a high IQ, high skill set sport, right? So if I can get my D guys just understanding how to be on the same page and then letting them go and have creative freedom, whether it's to throw checks, whether it's to slide to certain things, right? You know, that's been my biggest goal is teaching them a bunch of concepts, teaching them a bunch of skill sets, and then, but really ultimately having them come together, right? So throughout all my time, you know, my freshman year at Carolina, we were fortunate enough to, you know, win the national championship. We had a great team. And I think that was a group that really, as the year progressed, got better playing together. We got familiar with each other. And, you know, a couple of years after that at Carolina, you know, we didn't have as much consistency in the defensive group in terms of who was playing in and out of each year. So, you know, I don't think we had as much success. And then, you know, going to Georgetown, kind of timing up with the pros, you know, playing in the pros, I've played with D guys and goalies, right? Like Jared and Blaze, I played with them for 5 years, Pat Resch, Mark Lessini, Troy Ray. So in college and high school, you never get the opportunity to play with a guy for more than 4 years, right? Even if he's in your class and you guys both start at the same time, four years is pretty much your limit.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the next piece, right? It's like, we have no rules in the pros, but it's all just being comfortable with each other and playing off of each other. So that concept, right? Maybe it's not a good X's and O's concept in terms of, oh, we're not sliding, we're not going to help anybody, we're not going to have a two slide. But the idea of playing off each other and that comfortability of understanding, maybe it's not even verbal, just a physical action your teammate does. What does that mean? And how are you reacting off of him? Right. So that's kind of how we've started. This year, BU is making sure we're all on the same page, first and foremost. And then, again, like trying to make mistakes the right way and understanding how we have to cover up for our teammates in those kind of gray areas.
How important was it for you at Carolina that you were allowed to play your game, even as a freshman? I mean, I remember watching that championship run. Unbelievable run, by the way. You guys came together like – man, no other team, but it was cool to watch you as a freshman having sort of the license, you know what I mean? Like some kids don't get a license to do what you had a license to do. And it means a lot.
And I think even going back a year before that, like in high school, I know there's like a big push sometimes of playing against the best competition. I truly think that public school lacrosse helped me develop a well-rounded game. Because not that I just didn't have to guard someone on defense or I didn't have to be a communicator. It's like sometimes I had to clear the ball every time. Sometimes I had to be someone helping generate offense. I had to figure out how to shoot with my left hand, you know, as a junior with a pole. You know, when some guys, I think in high school, they get kind of locked in on like, I just want to be really good at one thing. You know, I was fortunate enough to have Coach Curran. That was my high school head coach. He told me, he's like, hey, look, like if you want to stay on and play a little offense, feel free. Go ahead. Right. Like we might need you to do that. And I think that just well-rounded lacrosse ability, understanding what the offense wants to do, understanding where I fit into that kind of has helped my game. And that's kind of where I've been, again, pushing some of my BU guys in a sense of like, learn what the offense is doing. Go do dodging drills in your off time. If you're a pole, grab a short stick. Like we need to get an understanding of, you know, what are our wrists supposed to do just fundamentally passing and catching. But then like, how do you set up a split dodge? Can you read what that looks like when someone else is setting up their move or something like that? And then, you know, kind of, and that was a little bit of a tangent, but then going back to Carolina, right? Like I think in a sense, I came into college with some unrealistic confidence just because I was like, yeah, I can do this. Sure. And I was able to have some success, you know, like my lacrosse IQ was not where it needed to be. My athleticism was, and it got me out of some issues and got me to be able to make some plays that maybe I didn't deserve to make in a sense, but you know, I had a kid older than me, Austin Pafani, you know, he's one of the guys lacrosse that I think has had another massive impact on me. You know, he was a multiple time first team All American. He threw all the checks in the world and he knew how to set them up. And he had a good mindset about going about the game, not just from an on ball perspective, but just a well-rounded game and the ability to like pick pieces off of him, you know, and it was nice. I didn't have to be the top defenseman for 2 years, right? I could let Piff go get the guy. Yeah. I could guard the number two and then I could have more success there sometimes because again, he's taking the best matchup. So being able to learn from him and seeing what he did well, what hurt him, right? Trying to pick pieces off, not even being critical of that, but just trying to learn.
Yeah. It's so interesting. The comment that you made about public school lacrosse helped me not playing against the very, very best competition. It's very counterintuitive. So many people think that you would have to play against the best to be prepared. But really, by playing at the level you played, you were able to, like you said, become a well-rounded player. And you earned a license to experiment with stuff that actually did translate, right? I mean, it's like your over the head checks, your ding dongs, the recoveries, the things that you learned how to do there, even though it was harder when you got to Carolina, it was the same concepts and you were able to kind of like bridge that gap.
Yeah. And that's like, that's the biggest thing I try to tell young kids, right? Like, you know, being up here in Mass now, I work with some of like the 3D guys that are really young, like the 29s and the 30s. And they're all like, oh, like I have I have 23 kids. One of them's a public school kid. Everyone else is going to private school. I told the kid, I'm like, hey, you'll be fine, man. Like, that's not going to slow your development down. And I think nowadays with how much club ball gets played, the emphasis on, like, you can get good lacrosse and good coaching a lot of the year where, you know, if you're comfortable being in a public school because you either play a second sport that you really like. Like, that was honestly the big thing for me. I played football. I visited Paul the Sixth, which is like a little Catholic private school in Virginia. I had some friends there. I visited there my junior year because I wanted to go there for my senior year because in my mind, I'm like, I need to play against better guys. You know, just kind of having a whole feeling after visiting the school, I was just like, I don't think this is where I fit in. Like, I think I'm better served, you know, being able to be the guy in a sense and having more of that responsibility. And yeah, I think it definitely helped.
It's awesome. So what are some of the things you took from Coach Warren defensively, the things that you, that he teaches, that he emphasizes, that you're sort of taking on to your new gig?
First and foremost, I think he's brilliant defensively. And if you if people who are listening to this haven't had the opportunity to actually watch him or listen to him talk X's and O's or draw on a whiteboard or go through a film session, and you might see him just being like a happy-go-lucky, cheery guy, you might not appreciate the brain that he has, right? But something that I found interesting, his biggest term that I took with me is like, I don't want to create cookie cutter defensemen, which by what I mean by that is like, I don't want to create guys that everyone's in a V hold. Everyone looks the same. Everyone plays the same. It's like, I want to take Patrick Morrison, one of my fifth year close guys, and make him the best Patrick Morrison possible. He plays different than my kid, Roy Meyer, who's my LSM here at BU, right? They're not even the same player. They don't look the same. They don't play the same. They have different skill sets. So Warren was really good about developing guys in their own way. Like, do you have to be a V-hole guy? Can you be a trail position guy and drag your hands through, right? Do you need to be someone that makes contact with your stick first because you need guys to make their move? You're less athletic. Like, there's a lot of details you got to look at. And then expanding that mindset, right, from an individual perspective to a group 6-on-6 perspective, I think it was my second year there, you know, the year we got upset by Delaware, you know, we had a bunch of really old guys defensively, like Gibson Smith got pro time, Alex Mazzone's had pro experience, Zach Geddes, Will Bowen, obviously, and then a couple guys that are still at Georgetown now that were younger then. That group, we might have had 35 defenses by the end of the year, right? We were drawing up new defenses every week because they had so much familiarity and they could play together. Yeah. The year after this past season, you know, my last season at Georgetown, we had some guys that were a little newer, maybe didn't think as quickly, but were awesome athletes, right? So then we had to change. We couldn't just play the defense we wanted to play. We had to develop things that fit other people's skill sets, right? And that's kind of like what I've been going through and telling my guys. They're like, oh, well, I thought this is how you do the recovery, or this is how you support on the backside. And I'm trying to get them. It's not, that is how we want to do it. But again, there is a lot of room for, there's a lot of gray area and there's a lot of room for you guys communicating and solving these problems on your own.
Yeah. Awesome stuff. How about Coach Towers? What have you learned from AT? I mean, I can tell you this. I've learned a lot of lacrosse from AT over the years. He's been a buddy of mine for a long time, and I probably have learned as much lacrosse from him as anybody else. But what have you kind of taken from that program and his staff?
First of all, before the lacrosse, just in terms of like a leadership piece, right? You know, he's someone that is prepared for every single practice. He's prepared for every single film. He is so consistent in his delivery and his message where, again, like I think a leader has to be, you know, consistently leading. You have to be a consistent model and a consistent example of what you want the guys under you to be like, right? So he consistently is prepared and brings energy and loves the game and then has a mindset about him and he thinks about the game in a specific way, right? So as a coach, I've taken some of that, right? You know, like I want my guys to be extremely intense in the film room, and then I want them to be able to kind of be almost like butterflies on the field where if they mess up, we're forgetting about it, we're moving on. So I have to be prepared in the film room and I have to be intense and I have to have good film sessions, right? And good notes to make sure that I'm showing them that this is the most important thing. And then on the field, I can't be someone who's screaming, yelling, and freaking out, right? When I'm asking them to be calm. So like I have a rule. It's like they can't freak out at each other until I freak out. So I have to do a good job of being under control and being coaching and teaching aspects, right? Before I'm getting loud and crazy and freaking out on somebody because they're going to follow my lead. And if we have 25 guys screaming, yelling, that doesn't help anybody. So yeah. that's just from like a leadership kind of
perspective,
just presence. Yeah, like what's your presence? And then from a lacrosse perspective, just the idea of not playing lacrosse in the typical X's and O's way, like something I was like, I kind of workshopped this with Coach Towers for a while, and I've done it a couple of times in the pros, is like a lot of attackmen are taught certain things, right? They're taught from a similar tree of people. So if you know how they're taught, right? Like I started going out and approaching people wrong, quote unquote, or like giving them room, or like, you know, if the offensive player was looking at me, they would think, oh, he approached bad. I have the angle I want. I know where to attack to get to this spot. I understand that my approach is bad. I did it on purpose, right? So that guy makes his move in the direction I want, and I can time that up with the check. I can almost bait him to go away and then jump that move and be in front of him ahead of time. So that was kind of stuff I was working with Tyres. I was like, if I come out this angle, right, like I have to protect one direction with my hips, one direction with my stick, like cover both lanes, be able to react to that move. I mean, anticipating he goes one, like top side, let's say, but in case he doesn't, I need to poke inside shoulder, drop my right foot to have coverage on both sides. And he's great with that. And like, you know, I have a bunch of checks that are in my bag that I haven't thrown yet, cause I'm like still trying to either work on them or just find the timing I like. And I just run them by him. I'm like, hey, if a guy's going right hand, he rolls back to his left and I overrun him with my feet, like how much of my butt end can I get around? Right. Or like, I was thinking about something the other day. It's like, if a big, strong defenseman is running towards your stick side, hey, you know, your stick side hand, and you struggle getting your hips around and turning them, like, what are different ways we can get into V holds? Like, what are different ways we can get to different moves? And he's good at giving me his opinion on him. He's good at telling me how he would attack me. And Josh Burns, another guy on the chaos, like me and him bounce ideas like that off Towers all the time.
Yeah. Towers, by the way, would have been a first team All-American defenseman if he had been a defenseman. That dude would had like ridiculous checks. Well,
and even like, so like my first couple years at Georgetown, right? Like I'm doing face-offs. Like that, he was my first call. Him and, like, you know, he was my first call. It's like, yo, you were the man standing neutral grip. Like, let's chat.
He invented all of it. He was the first guy.
And he has like, he has a video that I don't know if it's even public. Oh, like he made a little like face-off video, right? And he has some crazy moves in there. And I'm like showing my guys and I'm like, look, like this might not be your move every time, but it like the idea behind it is good. It's like
JR.
Yeah,
JR took the rake to another level, and it was huge for him.
Exactly. And just having the idea of it's like I think Tower sees lacrosse a little bit like a chess match, or in a sense of like, if this guy does this, I react like this. If he moves his piece here, I move my piece there. Like I'm trying to see three or four moves ahead. Yeah. So like when I'm coaching faceoffs, it's similar, right? It's like, okay, we've raked three times in a row. What is that coach telling his player on the side? Okay, now what can we go to counteract that thought process? Same thing defensively. It's like, have I thrown the same drop poke three plays in a row now? Can I throw a swipe or something different? Because that guy's not expecting this, and kind of playing that X's and O's, that like rock, paper, scissors, chess match, whatever you want to call it.
Totally. Last night I was watching the webinar you did with Colin, my son Colin, who now coaches at Colgate. You coached him at Georgetown, or was a teammate of his. And
we'll be recruiting together this weekend.
That's right. Hopefully I'll run into you guys. I'm going to be in town too. But anyways, I was watching the webinar you did with them on the breakdown of, I think that the topic was like approaches, but it really was about your matchups. And one of the things that you just mentioned a second ago that you talked a lot about on that webinar last year was just how much you change stuff up. And you've kind of said this, it's like a theme. And I think it's so important that you, in general, that people understand that like doing something the same way all the time is not necessarily going to be an advantage, not only for a matchup, but also for your own development, and to be able to learn how to do different things, to be able to learn how to have different approaches, to be able to learn how to back off and poke with one hand, to be able to learn how to use your stick to initiate contact, or your hands to go under picks, to go over picks, to have a repertoire of checks, if for no other reason than to recover. Right? Because you're going to get beat sometimes. And, you know, your ding dong trail check was one of the greatest. I texted you that immediately against Rob Fennell. The ding dong trail check was one of the sickest things I've ever seen. But that was just like a classic recovery of creativity defensively. But in any case, I just wanted you to talk a little bit about how you try to change things up in general Starting with like your approaches and how you like to play people in different ways, depending on who they are and what you've been doing.
So if I've never seen someone play before, if I'm going out and I'm a little blind or like maybe I'm guarding my BU guys and like I've seen them play, but I haven't like felt their movements.
Yeah.
I send everybody right-handed and doesn't matter to me if people know that, right? Like I'm going to send everybody to the right hand. I'm the best at my own defense when I get my stick on guys' backs and swing my hands in front and try to get my chest in front of the dodger. That's where I'm at my best. You know, the move I've had to work on guarding, you know, since college is the big power lefty fighting upfield and getting up on you, right? That's the move I've had to work on guarding the best, right? So for me, I'm going to come out in an angle every single time that if you're going to go left-handed, you have to cross my entire body. So if I'm approaching you and you're on this side, you have to split past my whole body. And if you want to go to your right hand, well, my feet and my hips are already opened up in that direction naturally. So I have a head start on you going that way. If you want to split past me, I have that extra half a second to see that you're coming past me. And now, okay, I can take a drop, open up again, and I'm still not beat. I'm still at a good even angle. The other thing I think about when I'm on ball that I don't know how to explain great is like, I don't consider the center of my body to be like my nose. So I'm right-handed. So I consider the center of my body with my stick extended to be like my stick side shoulder. Mm-hmm. So if I'm guarding a guy, like I don't even think about keeping my alignment, like my nose, I can almost like overrun because now my stick's an extension of me. Right. So I can keep that dodger kind of on this shoulder line in dodge the entire time as I'm reading him. If he rolls back, I have contact here and I have a stick to get active with. And it's kind of the same thing going the other way. If guy's going left, right, I got to keep my stick in front, trail with this shoulder, kind of keep my front side shoulder, my stick head shoulder in line with that dodger. That's kind of like the alignment piece that I like. You know, I tell my BU guys, I think 90% of one-on-ones are won and lost on the approach in the first step. If you approach well, you're ready to match speed, and you have a good first step that keeps your alignment the same as what you started with, you should win most of those unless you do something to mess yourself up. So again, so if I've come out a couple times, you know, the first quarter, I'm sending everybody to their right hand. You know, it's like, okay, now what do I have to do differently? It's like, you're expecting that, right? So like maybe the move you want to go to is right to right and roll back, because I'm going to have to open my hips quick and then drop and give you distance. Okay. So now how can I come out expecting a move to counter my approach? You know, what can I do with picks? Like if they're going to set a pick on me, I might change up how tight I'm approaching that guy. So then I can drop off and get under, or I approach him high and then I close that gap before the pick guy gets there. So I'm trying to have that pick guy not know if I'm going to go over top or under, or sometimes I'll start really low, let that pick guy be in a weird spot, and then I'll tighten up at the last second and close the gap on guys. Like trying to not allow the guy to see the same thing every time, trying to, in my mind, play a little bit of a game, either with the guy setting a pick or with the dodger himself.
So why do you think you like guarding guys going more to their right, even when you give them a step to their right?
Again, if I have the crease to go through, I'm going to always buy time. And like, that's what I try to tell kids when I coach clinics. Like I was down in New Jersey last weekend doing an event, and Michael Sowers and Grant Ament were there coaching the offense. And I looked at all my D guys. I was like, raise your hand if you think I'm faster than them. And no one put their hand up. I'm like, you're correct. I'm not. Like, they're faster than I am. But if I get the goal and I have good angles and I keep my hips going the right way and I take good steps, I will have a second to buy time right there and then. And by the time you get to goal line or a half yard above, I'm already touching you. I'm already in contact with you. Yeah. So, and it honestly developed from my rookie year in the PLL. I got inside rolled 10 times my first year in the PLL. Guys would go left. Or, you know, guys would dodge. I would either go V-hold or do something dumb, and I would get inside rolled, and there's no slide. I'm getting scored on. I'm like, I got to stop this. I can't get inside rolled again. I'm going to lose my mind. So then it was like, okay, what can I do differently? It's keep your stick behind him, and then if he goes right-handed, try to just fight your hands in front. And if he rolls, you at least have some sort of coverage there to make a play on it. And then it just happened once where I'm like, oh, that actually worked pretty well. And I've just, since the bubble, basically, I have had the mindset of, send guys to a direction that benefits your defensive game, whatever that is. If you're a V-hold guy, send them to your V-hold. If you're a trail position guy, send them in that direction. You know, if you're a slap check guy and you're like, you know, Will Bowen, big, strong, wants to slap lift guys, Will should send guys to their left every time, if that's what Will likes, you know.
Yeah, right.
Him.
Yeah, so well, you know, all right. So what, and also you definitely like to throw checks and create ball pressure with an array of things like ding dongs and over the head checks and stuff like that. Obviously you've got a lot more options when guys are going right. So, you know, while you're kind of keeping your stick behind them, you know, A, you've got optionality with checks if you want to get your swing, your hands in front. You also, if they do get a little bit of a step on you, you can use your hold, you can hold them and slow them down while you bring yourself back into position too, right? So you've got like a lot more to the repertoire, honestly, right on right than you do right on left in terms of depth, right?
Yeah, and then and then having like different types of checks, right? Like you have to have, like I have like checks I'll throw as like a lead check on the initial part of the dodge, and I'll have checks I throw middle of the dodge, and I, you know, obviously you have takeaway checks that you throw whenever you think that it's comfortable, but you know, just not going out like being so robotic and like having the same flat approach, hand in the pocket, like wide elbows, right? Like being a little more loose and natural and doing things that benefit you. Like that's my biggest thing with young guys. Like young guys come out, they play so square and they'll let offensive players do whatever they want. It's like we can dictate a little bit, maybe not all the way that the offensive can, but we can dictate a bit.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think it's really important, you know, some people love V-holds, some people hate them. At the end of the day, I think you got to be able to do both to a certain degree, because basically if they get past your left hand, what else you got? You're going to have to use your stick to slow them down and do something with it. And I also think V-holds, they can, if you get your hips above somebody in a V-hold, you're going to get inside rolled. And that's the mistake that a lot of people make. You know, you got to kind of like play it straight up with your cross check until they're kind of pushing past your left hand. And then all of a sudden you're just dragging them down. And partly I think V-holds are actually sick for teaching checks, actually, because the more comfortable you are in that position, the more likely you'll be able to like just lift your stick up and down and use your stick as for ball pressure.
And that's actually that idea. That's actually something Coach Metz at UNC gave me before my senior year. Right. So like, you know, going through three defensive coordinators, right. Like Metz was the guy I had the most consistency with, just in terms of like, I was with him for 4 years. Like I knew him really, really well. Yep. You know, like we were still really close to this day. And I asked him, I'm like, give me something. Like I need something new. Like, and he goes, okay. He goes, when you run with guys, keep your stick over their head the entire time. Just bait them the entire time. See how good your feet are. Can you run with your hands above your head and break down and still chop and just bait, and then land whenever you want. So in college, I started going out and trying to just run with my hands over my head, baiting guys the entire time, and then landing a check when I felt needed. And, you know, you mess up a couple of times, but that idea of just like being able to have your upper body and your lower body doing different things and not having to have them so connected to each other.
Yeah.
You know, that's just an athletic IQ piece even.
Yeah. How about this? A lot of people teach back off, drop step. And then it seems like the better athletes, the best athletes can move laterally, kind of like how shorties move and get bumps on you. How important do you think it is to be able to do both of those, and how much do you practice and try to do both of those?
I am a fan of the drop step. I teach it more like an offensive tackle, like in football, where he kind of like pushes off that front foot and he catches with his back foot, but he keeps his feet in the same alignment the entire time. So like if I have a good alignment, my right foot's in front of my left and that guy's kind of slow dodging me because he's waiting for a pick, or he's maybe moving laterally because he's trying to like get me at a different angle, like I'm going to try to keep my feet in the same position possible the entire time. So for the drop step piece, I call it like a chop, just because like it's like you're chopping like an offensive lineman with like kickback step almost.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't love the side shuffle. I don't think you have the timing to react to hesitations or rolls as well. I'm a bigger fan of teaching like a sideways run where you still have your shoulders square to your dodger, but you're trying to more run sideways, plant three steps, get the hips back around. Now, again, if we have guys like, you know, Will Bowen was so freaking athletic, he could side shuffle and guard everybody. You know, he could just move laterally and it wasn't a big deal, right? Yeah. So for him, you know, like when he gets to the pros, right, he's going to guard Mike Sauer sometimes. Like, I got to help Will be like, hey, you can't shuffle to guard him. You got to get out and move, big fella, because he's coming at you quick. But again, it can be different. I will say, the point that I go back and forth on as a coach is trying to teach guys to give space and make contact from the, like, a better squared position versus finding the first contact they can. And then typically being on a back shoulder, typically slipping off or leaning a little too much. I think that's right now the toughest line for guys to feel comfortable with is, how do I maintain space or maintain alignment while, you know, still trying to close gaps, right? If I'm not lunging at guys, like, how am I doing that? So, again, we've been working on kind of some different trail techniques and some stuff like that.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, by the way, on the moving lateral piece, I'm not talking about trying to shuffle when someone's running as much as how you actually get started. Are you backing off, or are you basically, like, putting your, you know, if a guy makes a move to his right and you just, and you want to bump him, you're just going to put your right foot in the ground. Oftentimes, like, you watch shorties, they actually hop their feet off the ground slightly and they actually put their foot in the ground and move. It's called a hip turn. And it's a natural thing that happens. If you watch the best cover guys that move laterally, that's what they do almost every time in any sport. They kind of, it's like they kind of hop their feet off the ground and move laterally. I noticed that you do that when you want to go over picks. That's what you do. You move laterally and you're not shuffling, you're running. You're basically getting right into a run because you can't shuffle with Mikey Sowers, but you're not going to get over a pick unless you put some force into the ground and move that way. And I just think that my point is you do so many different things to not just back off and use one hand poke, to not just, you know, your stick isn't always in his chest. Sometimes, like you were talking about on your webinar, that you put it to the right of them. And that's probably when you're going to move a little bit more laterally or just start running, if you know where you're sending them that way or whatever. I just think it's really interesting to kind of look at the different ways that you play guys in both one-on-one and pick situations.
Yeah, I think some of the quicker guys, you got to match their speed a little bit. If they're coming at you quick, you need to get backwards quick.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, but you know, that can go from a short little, like, walk up to a quick move right away. So I think even part of that is just not getting caught flat footed, like being able to maintain some sort of up and down feet motion, even if that's like the little hop step you were mentioning, to kind of bounce and get ready to react to it. I think that that's something that it's more individual athleticism and where you fit into that spectrum on what we need to do. Like, guys are slower defensively, may need to give more space, and they might not be taking shots away, but they're going to play angles where they're giving up low angle stuff, or they're coming inside. Maybe they're separating, giving up feeds, but, you know, we're still staying in front of our guys a little bit more. And then that comes, like, matchup issues.
Talk a little bit about how you might match up against somebody like Zed versus, you know, somebody like Sowers, as far as where you pick them up. You know, you talked a lot about on that webinar, you know, the heels in the crease type of deal, or getting out on guys to widen them. I think it'd be really interesting for people to hear that.
Yeah, so for a guy like Zed, we joke about it every time. Me and Zed we get along pretty well. Like, I joke about it with him. It's like, hey, should we just stand right here on the pipe and just fight right now? It's like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to get to the right pipe and fist fight each other for 48 minutes or whatever it is. For a guy like that, you know, I go back and forth on how I like to play him. Sometimes I like to press him farther out and not let him get a head start, because it's hard to slow him down. Yeah. At the same time, though, if you misplay a step, he's so big, he can lean and take your angle away. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, I like to try to get under and win that matchup and try to widen him out. I don't ever try to turn him back. Like, I never try to – I don't actually like the idea of closing the gate as much, like that old school term, closing the gate. Yeah. I don't think it's as realistic the better you get skill-wise. Yeah. So for me, it's like, okay, Zed's running full speed up the field. Can I take some of his momentum and just get him wide? Can I get him outside the two-point line? Even if he's getting upfield, he's out of shooting range, or he's out of shooting distance, or it's a shot Blaze's at least okay with seeing, right?
You mean then, like, a screenshot around your head from like 9 yards?
Yeah, when I duck and he misses me by like that much, and then I eat the next one and I like can't breathe for 15 minutes. Yeah, it's like, you watch, like, you go on the iPad, you watch, and it's like, wow, I barely missed blocking that. Like, I maybe should have had it. He was off my shoulder. And then the next one, I throw my body in there more, and he just smokes me. And he still gets a shot off. The ball still goes around me, so I didn't even get a real good block on it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, and part of it, too, isn't it like, you know, that you can, making people, if they're great on the island, at least make them work to get there, because they're going to have, you know, it's going to be when you've made, you know, three moves and three rollbacks or whatever to get there, it's definitely the fatigue factor, you know, is something that you can use to your advantage a little bit, I would think, as far as like in dodging. It's like, if they're that good on the island, you might as well make them work to get there. Right.
Yeah. Or then make the island be 10 and 10, not 5 and 5. Yeah. Right. Like try to get them as, or even if it's 7 and 7, you still steal 2 yards and you still got an extra second or half a second to get there. Right. I mean, he's the dude that wants to probably post you up. I would say him and Rambo probably, which is tough because they're on the same team. Yeah. Those are the guys who want to post you up the most and like get rolly. And then like going into a guy like Sowers, he's a tough one because he likes to start in that corner where he runs left-handed through the back of the goal with a pick. And then it's, you have to kind of play the game in your mind. It's like, okay, do I want to take away the pick, let him go upfield to his strength and become a shooter? Or do I want to try to get through a pick, get around the net, and maybe get hung up left-handed, right? So you played a little bit differently. Sometimes I'll go out and make him make his moves. When it comes to that, I actually like to see who the pick setter is. Like then you can start scouting, like, you know, what guys on the Water Dog set hard picks versus slips. Like Connor Kelly and Ryan Conrad set pretty freaking good hard picks. So if it's those guys, I know I need to just drop under them because they're not going to slip. Like they're there to pick me off to get Sowers a space open. Now, if it's Caraway or Ethan Walker, they're more typical shooters. They might want to slip and find space. So I could play the ball a little bit harder, expecting them to not want to make contact with me. And then again, like that. So I have to play the game back and forth. It's like, okay, Conrad setting the pick. Last time I was there, I was really up high and then I dropped off to get him at a bad pick angle, but now it's Caraway, so I need to do the same thing, just play it differently, just making sure you're going back and forth in your head, remembering who you already gave a look to.
Yeah. On that topic of two man, you mentioned this earlier, but it's really cool how you think about deception defensively, in that sense that like you might get out on a guy, force the picker to come out and set a pick far out just so that you can get under it easily, or vice versa.
Yeah, if I go, you know, 10 yards behind GLE, I'm making that guy make his move way farther away from the goal than he's accustomed to. Now, I don't like guarding that far away. I'm more like 5 to 7 behind GLE. That's my spot.
Yeah.
But if I do that and I get that pick guy to come 10 yards back and I hear the picks close, drop off real quick, get underneath, and then the whole pick is messed up. Even if they want to go and reset it, well, okay, 32 or 52 second shot clock, I just stole 6 seconds. Like that's all I need. Yeah. Right. Cause it's like, okay, you've been holding the ball for 12 seconds out of a 32 second shot clock. In his mind, offensively, he's like, I got to move it. You know, and then it comes down to, is the shot clock low? Do you know he's going, you can just play the ball all out and not worry about anything else? Or then it's like, he's going to feed and I got to get above the goal and probably be a fill to someone else.
Yeah. It's really, really cool strategy. It's kind of like when you're playing defense 1-on-1 with a pick, it's like you're playing 1-on-1 defense against the ball, but you're dodging the pick, you know what I mean? And you can shake the pick, you know, you can like fool the pick.
Hey, I scout pretty much like who sets hard picks and who doesn't. Like I'll know ahead of time, like, okay, if he's getting a switch, it's like these three guys set the hardest picks and these two guys slip more. Yeah. So I got to know who's going to do that or else it's like I'm guessing the whole time.
Yeah, for sure. Talk about a little bit about playing guys with like your heels in the crease and why you do that and why you practice it.
That's a Kevin Warren ism. Basically, the basis for that, at least in my experience with him, was 2 years ago, Bowen guarding Hanley up at Penn. And we knew that Hanley was going to start that year at attack. So it was actually a benefit to us because Bowen could be closer to the goal. And then it was kind of like, okay, how are we going to try to get Bowen through some of these picks at the back of the goal and not have Hanley switch on to a short signal that we might not like? So it's like, okay, Bo, set your feet in the goal, play your angles as best as you can, and then make contact and be strong, right? Like that's kind of where the mindset came from. So then for me, it's like, you know, if I'm guarding a guy that maybe is a little bit slower or someone who maybe we're actually in like the re-dodge portion of their odds, and maybe they dodge me through the goal line, then back down, reset, I might just put my feet in the crease. Then you can't hit me with a pick, you know, and then I can just play footwork and play angles the entire time. And I feel comfortable with my back to the goal, right in the crease, like that's where I'm the most comfortable on the field. Like I don't have to look. Like I have a pretty good understanding of where I am, where my feet need to go, kind of, and where I need to move guys.
Yeah. The only tricky part there can be, you know, when they adjust their picks up the goal line on you a little bit.
Yep. But then even like the whole idea of the pick too is like, again, if you think about how offensive players are taught, not many offensive players are taught to run off picks with their stick like in front of them, right? Because they're, you know, if we're expecting if you're setting a hard pick offensively, you might be expecting a switch. So you're expecting something to come out. So your stick's going to be more in like a, you know, like behind you, right? Like you're going to protect that stick a little bit. So I use those opportunities to go over the head. It's like, I know I'm getting a switch at goal line. Like our D middies know we're switching a goal line. So worst case scenario, I just miss it and we still switch. Best case scenario, I hit it. And then, you know, the guy that's setting the pick is he's not in a position to roll to the goal. He's on goal line. He's on the crease. You know, that would be like a 1 yard lever pass. That's so tough and tight to find that catch that and score.
You had the sickest one against Zed, actually.
Yeah. And that was the same thing. Like I was in a hang up. They set that goal line pick and I was with Geddes and I knew Geddes was going to switch it because I've coached and played.
You wouldn't have gone over that pick if you didn't know you had help. Right. I mean, the reason why you did that was like, I'm going to basically bait him into thinking I'm going to reach and then you go over his head.
Yeah, I think most teams in the PLL switch everything inside the two-point line. If there's a hard pick inside the two-point line above the goal line, like every team in the PLL switches that.
Yeah.
So, like, that's pretty common. So, like, I knew we were getting a switch. So I knew our guys wanted to get out on Zed to stop his momentum because if he runs into you, you're in trouble. So, like, they were going to get early on him. So he was going to see that and kind of punch his hands to lean. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I got a chance here. And just jump for one. And again, like yeah. I barely got it. He like held his stick low, come down on him. Yeah. I tipped him, but you know, again, like that works.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the way you play on the island, you know, with contact, right. You know, when you're in a hung situation, what I've, you know, I texted you about this earlier that I clip out your clips all the time because I like to watch what different defensemen do. But one thing I noticed that you do really, really well is you pop guys, but you maintain balance and it gives you an opportunity to make the next play. And I think when you watch people get beat at all levels, even at the pro level, they're just leaning. They're actually trying to blow the guy up that's trying to hit them. And when you know, if someone's running around you, you can bump them and widen them. But if they're coming into you and you try to bump them too hard, you're going to basically slip off them. They'll spin, bounce, hezzy past you. And I just wanted to sort of hear how you think about your right on right or right on left, or do you just do it?
Literally, this might sound silly. The idea behind that is like when I played football in high school, we didn't have the biggest offensive linemen. So we taught our offensive linemen, you don't have to block them. Just run in front of them and get in their way. And you're going to make them do something else. So in college, I was a bigger dude, right? I'm about 6 foot, a buck 90, somewhere, you know, in that world. Zed's 6'3", 6'4", maybe 260. I'm never going to win that if I try to like fight him with my hands. So my mindset is just run past him, get in front of him. He's going right-handed. I'm trying to run in front of him to the right. Right. And if he keeps fighting up the field, that actually ends up naturally widening him out because we're both fighting the same line and pushing him. And if he wants to go inside, then again, that benefits me. I got my stick there. Same thing if a guy goes left. I'm just trying to run to that outside shoulder. I'm trying to punch my hand to his far shoulder and keep my feet going in that direction past them. Again, it's like I'm not Tucker Durkin strong. Right. You know, I don't have the ability to just be, you know, bigger and more athletic than people. I have to just get in guys' ways. And then a little bit of it, like it turned into like, don't let a guy run through your chest. Like if they're going to run into you, you're trying to get past them. I end up with a lot of guys like hit me in the chest. And I kind of catch them and then move them. Yeah. Like it just kind of like, you can run through my stick. You can run through my hands. I'm going to bank on, you can't run through my entire body.
Yeah.
And if I just get in your way long enough, I can get you off and reset myself a little bit. And then I never get caught falling into guys. I never like try to create contact.
Basically get your cross check on the guy. You punch your hands to almost steer your cross check in a way that gives you a better angle. And then it's almost like using their momentum against them by soaking a little bit and giving a little bit of ground. It gives you balance and sometimes it gets them off balance.
Well, the other thing I've started to do as I've gotten older is like, I hate two-handed cross checks. And like, if I feel like a two-handed cross check is basically a blocking dummy that, or a wall that offensive players have worked on, you know, riding it up and shooting over that like balanced contact. Where I found that guys, where I found at least I can benefit is like uneven contact. So I might send my left hand and keep my right one a little more tight.
Yeah. I'm still
going to cross check on them, but it's not the same one they're used to. Now all of a sudden it's like they have more junk in front of them. They don't just feel like, you've seen people on Instagram all the time. They have like the blocking dummies. They run into them. They shoot the jumper up the hash or whatever the move is, right? And I'm sure it's a good drill, but it's like offensive players have, that's how they practice. So if you do that defensively, they've practiced beating you, right? Okay. But it's like, how many times did they practice like uneven pressure? Like I'm giving more pressure in my left hand than my right hand, or I'm giving more pressure in my right than my left. And I'm like, again, like you said, steering them kind of in a direction I want them to go.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's kind of like, you know, when you're right on left and you like and you swing your right hand around on like a reverse V hold. When you're right on right, you can almost do the same thing with your left hand. I mean, you're basically just like pushing your left hand out in front of them, and you can like not even have to necessarily have your body exactly behind it, and your body is behind the strength of the cross check steering, but you're not actually that far. It's more like your stick is more closing the gate than your actual body.
Yeah. My center of balance is still underneath me.
Yeah, totally. Cause you can't give up that much underneath. Right.
Yeah. And then that's just, again, like there are defenses in the PLL that are more slide recovery team oriented.
Yeah.
We're not right now. Like, again, and that's, we've had some success with that. Like, you know, Newman does a great job winning matchups. You know, I try to win all my matchups. Our D-Middies, Geddes is awesome. You know, Troy Ring, I think, is one of the best LSMs that people don't talk about enough. Like, I think he does a great job on ball. So that's just how we've always played. Kind of, you got to win your matchups. We'll slide if we think we can double and take the ball away. But for the most part, you know, you got to find ways to win those one-on-ones.
Talk about your right-on-left reverse V-hold, the way that you pop guys with that. I see a ton of people doing that. Shorties do it all day long. But they tend to almost hold guys, particularly the shorties, because they can kind of just clamp you, right? But when you see poles try to do that, they tend to get inside rolled more than they want to. But what you seem to do is just stop their momentum. And then again, similar to your right on right thing that I noticed, is like almost like you pop back and regain balance that allows you to make your next play, whether it's popping them again or whether it's trail checking or whatever.
And I think some of it too is like where you consider the middle of your body. Like I was talking about earlier, like when guys are going left, I'm trying to keep my hips behind them in case they roll. I need time to react and close that gap of my hips.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's almost like I'm reaching with my right arm, like reaching past them,
right.
But then I'm not, my feet are going in the same direction. I'm running a straight line in front of them. I'm not shuffling. I'm not trying to like turn my hips around.
Right.
I'm just running in a straight line and again, using their momentum and kind of just guiding them out and away from the net.
Yeah.
It's like, really, and when I was younger, I tried to like my first couple years in the league, like definitely the bubble year, I tried to just close everyone to GLE. I just like my body blew up. Like I'm trying to like sit there, fight everybody and like catch these big dudes. And then as I got older, I'm like, fuck that. We're going to send everybody up the field. I send them away from the goal. I use their momentum the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And again, that's a little bit for maintaining my body and not being as sore. And some of it is just like, as you get more mature as a defenseman, you realize that that might not even be the most efficient way to guard people.
Totally. One of the things that I also love about your game is you're really good at sneaking up on people on double teams and stuff. And I want to just sort of get your opinion on like what you look for. Cause I kind of feel like a lot of defensemen could double guys, you know, when they're posting up on the island and more than they do, but I feel like they're not looking for the right things and trying to figure out when the Dodger loses sight of the crease guy or Coleman guy, whatever. But how do you do that? How do you think about that?
So for me, it's two things. I teach my BU guys the same thing. It's change of speed and change of height, right? Fast to slow means something's happening. Slow to fast can even mean like we're selling topside really quick for a roll. So anytime I see a change of speed, which, and that kind of pairs up with change of height, right? Mm-hmm. Guys are going fast, they'll stand up taller. And that might let me know that then they're going to sink their hips or same thing. Yeah. Guys are rolling and then they sink their hips, right? They get lower, smaller. I got to go because you have a move coming. And even if it's like a rocker and I take two hard steps, I don't get there, I can read the move and get back to my guy. Yeah. So for me, it's like change of speed and change of height. I got to get going in that direction because I'm reading your body, reading some of that.
It's the same thing in the midfield too. When you want to slide to a rollback in the midfield, like you can totally see it coming with this change of speed, change of height. And I would add physicality in there too. Like when you see somebody like popping somebody.
You can scout guys too, right? If it's like, you know, if you have a guy on the island who is, let's say he's an NLL guy playing the PLL, right? And he's more box oriented. He's probably not going to want to run up the field and shoot runners over his shoulder. He's going to post up to get inside and shoot something short side, or he's going to try to get more crafty and tight. So a little bit of it is a scouting thing, right? It's like, okay, who are we guarding? Where are we okay giving that guy up a shot? You know, where does he, you know, is the offense clearing out one side of the field so he can get underneath? You know, it's a little bit of that as well.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about two-man defensive coverages. What's your preference? What do you like? Or is it a matter of, you know, game by game, matchup by matchup, changing it up?
A little bit of it is matchup based. Honestly, right now, Sowers is the dude. I got to play differently than other people because his ability to separate from you is special, obviously. So I got to guard him a little different. But for the most part, I'm going to try to go over the top. So like get in between. I'm going to like try to touch my Dodger, right? And go over every pick because that's going to let my D mid, you know, right away if I'm in trouble or not. If I get clipped and fall, you're going to know. If I get through it clean as day, you're going to know. My fear with going under picks is you're allowing slips to have much more time, right? Because when I go under, my D mid is still reading contact, right? So he's looking at me in the pick setter. He might even be looking at the Dodger if he thinks I'm getting under, he has to switch it. All of that still allows slips to go. If I go hard through the top side and I run into you, you can't slip. Maybe I knock the pick setter over, right? But I'm taking away that offensive option. So I'm giving me and the other D mid a mindset of, we're playing this strong pick. We know what's coming. We're dictating a little more. And then if they do slip it, it's even better because I can get over the top. They don't make contact with me and we stay in our matchups.
Yeah. So it's like playing the ball as if there was no pick there.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. In a sense. Right. And again, there's a couple people like
Mike. Ups, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Michael specifically is someone I change up. I just try. I give him different looks every single time. Just see if he has an idea what I'm trying to do to him. But yeah, I try to go over everything, anticipating that if I just want to make it easy on my D-minis. If I get crushed, please switch. If I make it over, you're good, stay.
Yeah. And, you know, if you switch, at least you killed a little bit of clock, you know?
Yeah, exactly, because then they're going to back up, reset. And sometimes the PLL, that's not the worst thing to get that switch and have them back out, because then you force guys to skip the ball. You force them to make decisions sped up.
Especially the way these shorties are playing defense now, holding the crap out of people. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that is. The other thing, the PLL, that it's like hit or miss is the whole moving picks versus moving the picker. Yeah. It's like, did I get hit by a moving pick or did my D midi jam that guy into me unintentionally? You know what I mean? So like, that's a little bit of it too.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. And they do a decent job. The refs do a pretty good job warning you about that and talking to the benches. Like, they don't want to throw a flag on that.
No. I don't love seeing pickers being shoved all over the place. And I don't love a ticky-tacky on-ball pick. And I also don't mind the holding that goes on either. I mean, I kind of feel like I like, people are still scoring goals, you know. Yeah. It's like, it's not like there aren't a lot of goals being scored.
Yeah, there weren't any single digit two-sided games this year. Uh-huh. Everyone got to double.
Everyone was scoring goals. And I thought the short to stick play was better than ever.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, you're even seeing like a guy comes to my mind right now. I don't know why. It's just like Matt Witcher. Like that's a guy who's had an awesome freaking year. You know, he's up at Dartmouth now crushing it. He's a guy I like hanging out with him in the summer, recruiting and just doing lacrosse stuff. Like that's a guy who like helped that Water Dogs team the last 2 years transform a little bit. Him, the kids Carpello, right? Yeah. Like they've been changing that team a little bit with their ability to win matchups.
No doubt. Hey, I want to talk a little bit about going back to checks a little bit. How do you think about setting up checks versus just throwing, because I see, you know, the best guys of all time use checks to set up checks. And, you know, whether it's poke, setting a couple pokes in to set up a can opener, whether it's using a can opener to sort of bait a guy into turning the corner on you, so now you can get him on a ding dong with the threat of an over the head and all that stuff. So I was just curious how you sort of think about that.
A little bit is, I don't think I do a great job setting checks up. I think in college I was better because guys held the ball a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Like PLL now, if I run out of D midi and I try to like start like throwing a back check into a poke to like throw something, they're going to whip that ball to someone else. So in the pros, it's a little bit harder to set those up. So for me, I've tried to find like, again, just areas on the field where guys are not going to be stick protecting, right? Like, are they running off picks and I'm the guy switching onto it and I can't anticipate he's running full speed and I can try to time up a can opener with that, right? Or, you know, I'm a guy that has my stick in a trail position a lot, right? So offensive players actually keep their sticks in front of them a little bit more when I play them because they're used to me being in a trail. Now, if I go V-hold, that's going to let you know that you need to move your stick back. So I almost use my V-hold to set up going over the head.
Yeah.
Every time. Yeah. And a little bit is, again, I almost think about sometimes trying to like play my feet or like get guys to, you know, maybe overrun one direction with my feet to get them to move. And I'm almost trying to time up my checks with the move because I'm almost setting that check up with my feet or body position. So it's like I'm overrunning them into one direction intentionally. So on the roll, what was that?
If a guy dodges up lefty on you, you let him roll back and back check him on his rollback, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely, right? Or even like a guy's going left and I want to have him roll back so I can throw a can opener, right? Like I might run my feet in front of him and almost throw my hands anticipating the rollback. So as soon as he rolls, my stick's already in a V-hole and I'll throw a can opener.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I try to set my checks up more with body position and like playing my feet or like, again, giving them a look where it's like, they think, oh, Rallet overran me with his feet. I got the rollback now. It's like, no, I'm doing that on purpose so I can go into my V-hole to go over your head.
Like the Tucker Durkin check that you did against Zed in Denver too.
Yeah, it's like, you know, me and Zed, I was throwing checks. And like, if you watch that, I knew he kept going left slowly, wanting me to overdo it. I just kept waiting on the right. And then at some point, like, I got a little too aggressive. I was like, I got to go for it. And just threw him.
What do you call that check?
I hate that check. I call it the buggy whip. And the only reason I call it that is because it was like one of the first games of my career as a freshman. I threw that and got beat. And Feist pulled me off the side. I was like, don't ever throw the buggy whip again. And I was like, got it. Sounds good. Yeah, I call it the buggy whip.
It's interesting though. Like, it's definitely, it can definitely leave you in a bad spot. But sometimes, to me, that was a recovery check though. You basically overplayed him a little bit. He spun on you. You had nothing else. And although I see Tucker Durkin set it up.
Yeah, I think that's like if a guy wants to get to his left hand up the field with a pick at goal line, he goes right, maybe rolls back to his left to get top side, and you go with him on the right. And as he rolls, again, you're expecting switch, throw it. Who cares if you miss it? Because you got – and then again, if you're D-mini, like, you know, like we even talked about like end of game situations or if we need the ball back, like, hey, next time they set a pick, you better switch it like 2 seconds early to tell that guy to put his stick back so I can jump and go for one or something like that.
I love that. It's a great call. Well, Jack, I really enjoyed this. I love talking lacrosse. Yeah. Fun to talk defense. Hopefully our paths will cross sometime soon, but great. Good luck this year.
I appreciate you.
Good luck in recruiting and we'll be in touch.
Trying. Absolutely. I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right, man. See you, Jack.
Have a go.
Later.